Tonight on Coast to Coast, we'll be talking with Greg Little about a number of things he's been working on: Mound Builders, Edgar Casey's Forgotten Legacy, Path of Souls as well. There's so much to talk with him about, and we'll get right into it when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Greg Little, of course. Dr. Greg Little is a psychologist turned explorer, widely considered to be an expert on the psychic Edgar Casey. He and his wife, Laura, have been involved in the Casey Organization's Search for Atlantis project. They've made a number of week-long trips into the Yucatan, the Bahamas, and other areas searching for clues about Casey's mysterious Hall of Records. There's so much to talk with Greg about tonight, and he has also been focusing on Casey's ideas about America's ancient mound builders as well. Greg, welcome back. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, Mr. Norrie, and it's a pleasure to be on your show and to speak with your listeners.
What projects are you undertaking these days, Gregory?
Oh, my. Well, too many to talk about, but, yeah.
Well, you better talk about some. We've got 3 hours to go.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, so a lot of it is just too much. But basically, I've been focusing on mounds, a lot of material on Casey also. And there's more and more coming out about Casey and sort of secret things that went on toward the end of his life. We'll talk about some of that. But
okay.
I'm really focused on the what's called the Path of Souls, the Native American Death Journey. And it's the Native American Death Journey is really about ancient mound builders in America and what they believed. And that's actually pretty amazing. And I know we'll get to that later. But that's kind of my focus, and these giants, it's quite a controversy right now. As you well know, I know you've
sure
had people
is.
Talking about this.
Steve Quayle, oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's over 1,500 newspaper reports of large skeletons that were recovered in America, roughly from the 1800s through the mid-1900s. And I, along with Andrew Collins, really focused on the archaeological excavations that recovered some of those extremely large skeletons. We really wanted to look at the verifiable reports to try and figure out what was going on. So that's kind of what I've been focusing on.
Good for you. Now, lots of new listeners join us all the time, Greg, and you know, a lot of them are younger people who might not know who Edgar Casey was. I want to get into that and you. First of all, give us a little bit more background about you and then about Edgar Casey.
Well, my background, I'll give quick. I have a bachelor's and master's degree in psychology, a doctorate in counseling and educational psychology. All my degrees are from what was Memphis State University. It's now the University of Memphis. I just hate it when universities change their names. I just hate that. But
they screw up all your memorabilia that you bought,
yes,
right?
Yes, they do. And I've gone places and people have asked me, well, what happened to Memphis State? Because they remember it from basketball in the 70s. And say, well, it's still around, but it's no longer called that. But I got interested in Casey in the 1970s when I was in psychology because of unusual experiences. I had an interest in experiences where people literally changed everything about their life, and it seemed to be paranormal experiences that did it. Casey had an experience at age 13 that literally changed everything about his life, and I guess that's kind of where I'll start with Casey. Casey was born in 1877 in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, which, as a lot of listeners know, Hopkinsville was the site of one of the most famous UFO cases of all time, the Kelly Hopkinsville Goblin case. Casey's family lived on a farm. He saw a grandfather die when he was 3 years old, and from that time on, he started seeing little people, almost like fairies. He conversed with these. He supposedly saw dead people and conversed with them. But at age 13, he was in the woods. It was his birthday. And he had this goal that he would read the Bible one time every year of his life. And he was reading the story of Manoah, which, as you know, is a story about an angel visiting Manoah's wife. And just as he was reading the story, he had a visitation from an angel. Now, he claims this was a physical visitation by an angel, not a vision. the angel asked him what he most wanted in life, and he just simply shot back, well, I'd like to help people. And the angel said, it will be yours, and just disappeared. He told his mother about it. He was worried about it. They were devout Christians. And she told him, well, maybe it means you'll be a doctor. Well, Casey was relatively normal at that time, except immediately after this experience, he discovered he could sleep on books and memorize them. He knew word for word. This was actually tested by a variety of people. There's a lot of experiences that he had where people verified this, and it's just well documented. I mean, it's bizarre, I admit. He became kind of a local celebrity because people would test this. He would go in front of groups. They would have him fall asleep on a book for a few minutes and then open the book randomly and ask him what was on a page, and he knew it word for word.
Wow.
Well, at age, when he was age 24, Casey was selling insurance near Hopkinsville. He lost his voice. A stage hypnotist came through Hopkinsville, hypnotized Casey, and his voice came back. Well, as soon as he was off the stage, he lost his voice again. And the hypnotist said that for some reason, Casey could not take post-hypnotic suggestions. So he went to a local osteopath who also performed hypnosis. And in this hypnotic state, Casey suddenly began diagnosing his own problem. And he gave a suggestion to the hypnotist. The hypnotist told him then to increase the amount of blood flow to his neck. The people in the room all stated that Casey's neck got blood red. Casey then came out of the trance, coughed up blood, but could then talk normally.
Huh.
So this doctor then began testing Casey by saying, essentially, well, if he can do this for himself, maybe he can do this for other people. And he began sort of like a psychic diagnostician. They would have a patient that they would ask him about, and then Casey would diagnose the patient's problem and then prescribe some sort of remedy. It got the interest of many, many physicians. There are a lot of really intriguing stories about how they validated this. Large groups of physicians came. There's one case, for example, where there were 8 physicians in a room with Casey, and they had a patient in another room. They didn't tell Casey anything about the patient, and he began telling them every single problem the patient had. One of the doctors got angry and said, "You're reading our minds," which is strange in itself.
That's right.
And the doctor shot back to him. He said, "Well, tell me something we don't know." And Casey said, "Well, look under this person's big toe, and you will see a rash forming right now." So the doctor literally went to this other room, took the shoe off of the patient and looked, and a rash formed right in front of his eyes.
Amazing.
And came back in. I mean, that's just one of many, many stories with Casey. They actually documented most of his readings. He gave 14,306 readings where every single word from the reading was written down. And a lot of these were then followed up and tested by various physicians. A number of medical articles have been written about it. And because of this, Casey is known in the American Medical Association, actually dubbed him the father of holistic health in the United States. So that's kind of a background.
All right.
The health readings have the most validity. But he also gave readings about other things.
And we'll get into all of that too, Greg. Was he called the Sleeping Prophet?
Casey was dubbed the Sleeping Prophet by the New York Times in 1910, and that actually led, it kind of opened the floodgates to where he was kind of a celebrity in the Kentucky and Alabama area, and then all of a sudden he started getting thousands and thousands of letters, and that also brought him the attention of some rather famous people like Edison and Tesla.
Who was helping Casey in the trance state? Was he getting information on the health issues and, you know, the issues of geography and the Hall of Records? Was he getting the information from entities from the other side, or what was he tapping into?
Well, there's two things, but the main thing, he said it was the Akashic Record, and that this is really interesting, and this is actually part of where Tesla and Edison fit the story. As you know, Tesla claimed that he had a higher self that gave him information. Casey said there was a sort of record floating around in the universe. He called it the Akashic Record. And he gave an example. It's like the grooves in a record. And this came later years where he explained it this way. But if you actually read these, all the readings, and you look at all the information, it's pretty clear that Casey was talking about vibrations in the electromagnetic energy spectrum. And he said that as things occur, everything from thoughts to actual actions in the universe, it sends out a vibration. And that vibration can be read a lot like the grooves in a record can be read. You probably remember back in the 60s, occasionally on The Tonight Show and some of the other TV shows, there was this one guy who could come on, and they would have phonographic records, which some of your listeners have never seen. But they had little grooves in them, and this particular guy could look at the grooves and actually tell you what the song was, because he could see the grooves and see the differences in it.
Was it Kreskin?
No, it wasn't Kreskin. I cannot remember the fellow's name. It was really, really fascinating. But that's essentially what Casey said that he was reading. This Akashic Record were like the grooves in a record. And it was accessible, he said, to everyone, but you had to kind of tune your mind into it.
That is amazing all by itself.
Well, it is amazing.
When Casey was in his trance-like state and he was tapping into these records to get health information, his accuracy was almost uncanny, wasn't it?
His accuracy in the medical and the health readings is pretty well documented. It's somewhere between 85% to 88%. And that does not mean that the percentage of so-called inaccuracy was really inaccurate. Most of those, they really can't tell. They can't follow up on all these old records and tell exactly what the actual problem with the patient was. But he was at least 85 to 88% accurate with all the health readings, and that's actually pretty good. That would be good today for a physician. As far as these others go, we've looked at some of the readings, a lot of the readings actually, in the ancient world, and it's remarkable what he was saying back in the 1920s about the ancient world. Simple example, in the 1920s, American archaeologists asserted that no one had been in the Americas until about 4,000 years ago. They had no idea. I mean, they hadn't discovered Clovis at the time. They had no idea that there were loads of people here by 10,000 BC or even before. But Casey said that in the 1920s, a time that it would have been impossible.
Well, and it's he's being vindicated now. I just did a show last few days ago about ancient visitors before Columbus.
Absolutely.
And it's amazing what has happened in North America.
It is. I know we're going to talk about some of that. North American history, ancient history, is true that we really have not been told the real truth about it, but we don't know the entire truth yet about ancient American history. It is far older than anybody realizes. That's very clear right now. How far back it goes, we don't know.
Are you still looking for those Hall of Records?
We are. As you know, we've been to the Bahamas and searched for the Bimini Hall of Records. Mm-hmm. We've spent 25 weeks on boats in the Bahamas. And we've been in the Yucatan at the site there where Casey said there was another Hall of Records.
Right. And then there's one at the base of the Sphinx, three spots.
Correct. Right. And actually, before Zahi Hawass was terminated in Egypt, he wasn't killed. He was terminated
still out there.
In his job. Yeah.
He's got some legal issues now.
Yes, there are some legal issues. But before, right before Zahi lost that position as essentially the head of all Egyptian antiquities.
Yeah.
He had done two drillings at the Sphinx with material that was drills, actually, that were supplied by the ARE, back again looking for the entrance into a chamber under the right paw of the Sphinx.
And there is some kind of chamber down there. There's no doubt about that.
Something down there, absolutely. There is some sort of a, it's either a cave or it is an actual chamber that was carved there. And we know also that there is a cave system that runs under the entire Giza Plateau. And, of course, that was found by Andrew Collins a few years ago. In fact, I was on the show, your show.
That's right.
When Andrew was in Egypt and told me about the discovery.
Yeah,
and I
exactly.
think we announced that first on your show.
We sure did. Now, the Hall of Records, and Casey again said they're in three locations. Are there, in your opinion, Greg, are they three duplicates? So each area, Bimini, Central America, or the Sphinx, are they all the same, or are there just different pieces in different places?
No, Casey said they deliberately did three of these so they would be preserved, and he said that they contained identical things. The one in Egypt is the only one that supposedly has mummified remains in it, but they all have 32 stone tablets. On those stone tablets, the writing is supposedly on all the sides, and it is a history of Atlantis, a history of the ancient world. And it also has technological information. He said there were also linens, gold, a variety of different artifacts from the culture, and some other things. Some weapons are there, too.
Huh.
But all three of them are supposedly identical. One is underwater in a temple in the Bahamas. The Bahamas has had a two-year moratorium on all archaeological permits.
Why?
Well, it's a long, involved story, but apparently, and in fact, I was doing more research on this today. Apparently, some salvagers recovered some gold, which I hadn't seen the figure until today. The Bahamas claims that there's somewhere around $8 or $9 billion worth of gold in their waters. So these salvers will get a permit. They will go out, and they're supposed to share what they find with the Bahamas. But several of them went in a couple years ago, went out and did work, and then left. And they reported they found nothing, but the Bahamas believes that they did, in fact, find gold, and they may have. So they simply they suspended all of the current permits that were out there, and they haven't issued any in 2 years. And I saw today that there's 94 that are pending. One of those is by archaeologist Bill Donato in California, who we work with. And then there is another archaeological group that I can't talk about too much, but they are affiliated with Microsoft, and they are interested in the temple, pile of temple ruins that we found a couple years ago, roughly 10 miles south of Bimini. And they have been there and looked at it, but we're instructed that we really can't even go back and look until the permit moratorium is lifted. So that's where that stands.
Just amazing.
And
this technology, and we're going to come up to the break, but I do want to talk with you more about the Hall of Records. When you talk about weapons might be in there, these may be incredible lethal weapons of a magnitude and a scope we have no concept. We'll be back in a moment with Gregory Little on Coast to Coast AM. Well, the magic number today, 250 of you to take a free look at our television program, Beyond Belief. How do you do that? You go to this website. Here you go. Remember it. Do it fast. Beyondbelief.com. That's it. www.beyondbelief.com. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Gregory Little with us as we talk about the life of Edgar Cayce and so many other things. So, Greg, back to the Hall of Records for a moment. Do they pick up, after Genesis, for example, in the Bible? Where do you think it is chronologically?
Probably 200,000 B.C. According to Cayce, the records begin with the start of Atlantis, which Cayce dated to about 210,000 B.C., and it was the beginning of a new race of humans on Earth, which he said started in Atlantis, and that supposedly is when the records begin. Although the first humans, the first people, according to Cayce, were about 10 million years ago. But the first modern humans were about 210,000 years ago, according to him.
Does he discuss the possibility of extraterrestrial life, that they may have come here to seed us, anything like that?
There is no doubt that Casey believed in life on other worlds. There's no doubt at all. There are two Casey readings that are very clear about what you could call alien visitation. One of them took place in the Yucatan right after Jesus was born, and it's very clear that some extraterrestrial entity, according to Casey, visited Earth then. The other one goes back to 10,500 BC, and it had to do with Atlantean priests who had contact with alien entities. It doesn't say just purely that these people came and visited, but it said they received messages from them that there was going to be a massive destruction on Earth, and that is why they formed the Hall of Records, because of this coming destruction. Casey also made it clear that humans traversed the universe in what he called sojourns, soul sojourns, that the soul of humans kind of reincarnated on different areas of the universe in its evolution, that we would hop sort of from one place to another to evolve. So you can read into that whatever you want, but it's pretty clear that he did believe in aliens. He did say a couple times that they had visited, and then there's this idea of sojourns between planets and other worlds. Very strange stuff.
The so-called weapons that you mentioned that could be in the Hall of Records, I would assume that these weapons are of high, high technology.
The readings, the only thing that it says that would be almost scary is that this crystal, which it sounds almost like some sort of a laser weapon, but something that's far more powerful than anything that we know about today. He related that this crystal technology, which could be tuned to various levels and various frequencies, that the design of this is on those tablets. And so, yes, that would be pretty high technology. One of the design supposedly is on a rock in the Yucatan, which is the site is probably Piedras Negras in Guatemala, which is on the Usumacinta River. And we've actually been there. That trip nearly killed me. That's a long story. But there is a rock there that has some very interesting things on it. And the University of Pennsylvania did a lot of work there in the 1930s. But yes, it would be all high tech. That would be high technology. As to what weapons are actually there, that's unknown. At least Casey just said that there were some there. But the design for this crystal, which could be used to either generate power or be a weapon, is included on those stone tablets. Yes.
Just remarkable. I mean, everything he does. Now, he also had a glimpse of our map that North America would look totally different in the future because of inundation of water. Tell me about that.
Well, Casey, actually, the truth is there's only, there's actually less than 20 Casey readings out of the 14,000 plus that were written down. There's less than 20 that talk about these coming Earth changes. There's a couple of those that people and skeptics have misinterpreted. He talked about, in 1936, he said that something would happen and that world powers would be broken up. And what he was probably referring to was in 1936, there was a civil war in Spain, and China declared war on Japan, and Hitler invaded the Rhineland in that year. The other Earth changes, though, were about physical things. He said that at the start, that roughly beginning around 1998 to 2001, there would be the beginnings of some physical Earth changes. Japan and California, he said, would fall into the sea. The Gulf of Mexico essentially would go up what is now the Mississippi Valley and essentially become the Gulf of Mexico. and I live on the Mississippi River, and I've looked at the maps pretty carefully, and actually I think I'll have oceanfront home then.
Yeah,
if that happens. But that's the one reading that skeptics love to point to, and they say that hasn't come to pass yet. But there's several of Casey's readings that haven't entirely come to pass yet. But he said repeatedly that the future is not set, that things could change. People have choices, and the things in the world, even the physical earth changes, those won't necessarily come to pass. And that's something that skeptics just don't acknowledge. Casey said the future's not set. We have free will.
Who did the map of North America based on the Casey readings? Did he do it, or did somebody else do it?
No, that was actually done by a geologist who worked with Casey, not with Edgar himself, but it was immediately after Edgar died, this particular PhD geologist got involved with the ARE. For years, he was simply known as the geologist. Then he started a website, and he called himself William Hutton, which was a pseudonym. He was involved in some of the early things at Bimini. And a few years ago, he publicly announced who he really was, and he was actually the first skeptic of Bimini
that published
the first articles. It's a very, very, very strange story.
Was the map pretty accurate based on Casey's readings?
The map is pretty well done, and it's pretty accurate based on what Casey said. The part about it that we don't know is exactly when this is supposed to take place. I mean, it could take place over millions of years. Who knows?
So he never put a date on it?
No, he did not. He said that things would begin to change in between 1998 and 2001. He said that would be the beginnings, but he didn't say anything drastic was going to happen then. He just said that was the beginning of the time, but he gave no date when this was going to happen.
Did he echo at all the book of Revelation in the Bible, the apocalypse?
He did talk about end times and second coming some, but it doesn't really sound exactly like Revelation. Casey's vision is more positive for humanity. He talked about the coming of a new root race, which is the fifth root race. He did not say when it would take place. He also said that human lifespan will get much longer than it currently was or currently is. He didn't say when it would take place, but he said that it will occur because we will be able to replace organs. We will be able to deal with organ deterioration, which, of course, is what kills most of us.
That's right, and it's happening. Yeah. We're doing it. It's amazing.
But he didn't have this dark vision that you get with Revelation, to where there's massive conflagration everywhere in the world, and a third of the world's population is killed immediately, and another third is killed over a period of time. Casey didn't have that negative vision. His vision is more one of hope and for humanity to have high values and serve each other.
You've said that the Casey Organization, ARE, that they've been doing some research lately about some pretty famous people who had Casey readings. Can you disclose who those folks might have been?
I can tell you quite a few of these. There's more and more coming out all the time as they get permission from various people. Actually, this past year, at what is called the ARE Congress, which they have great meetings there. I'll describe a few of those in a while. But they had Sidney Kirkpatrick, who's been on your show a few times.
Yeah.
Stood up and gave a lecture about a particular man that had a health reading, and then he introduced this man who was in his 90s. The man had never even told his family that he'd had an Edgar Casey reading and what it was for and how it helped him, and the man came up and gave a brief talk, and his family was just astonished. They had no idea why they were even there. But Sidney Kirkpatrick has been doing a lot of this research. But some of the people that Casey did readings for, George Putnam, who was Amelia Earhart's husband, as soon as she disappeared, he contacted Casey, and Casey gave them several readings, neither which of them were real positive. The first one, he said that she had crash-landed, her navigator was dead, and that she was badly injured. And a week later, when Putnam came back to Casey for another reading, Casey told him it was too late, that she was dead.
Wow.
Woodrow Wilson is another example. And Casey was actually escorted secretly from Virginia Beach to the White House and taken in secretly to the White House. Woodrow Wilson had suffered a stroke in his last years in office, and he was literally in bed, and they brought Casey in to do a reading with him. And Casey gave really two things. One, they wanted to know about the League of Nations, and Casey essentially told them it was going to fail, which it did. And they wanted to know what Wilson could do, and Casey essentially told them that there wasn't much that could be done at that point. But he's another example. I've already mentioned Thomas Edison and Nikola Tesla. Nelson Rockefeller had readings done. That's surprising. Irving Berlin, George Gershwin, Gloria Swanson had.
Jeez, I would have gone to him if he were around in my day, or me in his day.
Probably, yeah. George Meany, who was a major labor leader, had readings done.
Sure, the FFL-CIO, if I remember.
Yes, sir. Ernest Hemingway's mother had readings done about him. She was concerned about Hemingway's writing and problems that he was having.
Greg, would he have been a guest on this show? Would he have come on this program?
Edgar?
Yeah.
He would have, but he would have been himself. He would not have been able to go into a trance. And remember, I use the term Casey readings because when Edgar Casey went into this psychic trance, whatever came out wasn't Edgar Casey the man. He was very different. He was a different personality than the readings. In fact, the readings said that Edgar Casey was actually a very poor conduit, a very humble and very poor conduit for the material in it. Edgar liked to hunt, fish, he smoked, he would drink. He wasn't an alcoholic, but he gardened. He was a very regular man. He was a photographer. That's what he did professionally. In fact, he photographed Theodore Roosevelt several times. So, I mean, he was a very humble man. So, yeah, he would have come on, but he probably would not have talked too much about this psychic stuff. He was a Sunday school teacher, so he definitely would have discussed the Bible with you. A few other people, David Sarnoff, the founder of NBC, was one. The guy who founded Goodyear Tires. And Harry Truman's office actually called Casey, and this is just now being investigated. In 1944, Truman's office called, and it is now known that the U.S. Department of Military Intelligence had several meetings with Casey in Washington where they conducted some readings, but the exact details of that remain unknown.
Did he? I have always heard, Greg, that when he died, it was because he basically was exhausted from all these readings.
He was told to do no more than one or two readings a day. And by that time, 1945, Casey was getting thousands of letters every day. People requesting readings because they had someone in the family that was ill.
Dying. Desperate letters, no doubt, right?
And he responded to that. I'm sure that he agonized over it. His family tried to get him to not do as many readings, but he simply did them constantly. And the readings kept telling him that you cannot do this. And the last reading he gave was for himself. And it sort of told him it's too late. And he had a stroke and died then. But, yeah, he basically, the readings worked him to death at the end, and he chose to do that. But that's the story. He was simply inundated with requests for help, and he could not turn them down.
I would guess he was a pretty enlightened, great person.
He was really well loved. He had a real core of people that got around him. They loved the work. They actually loved the man. And that's actually how the ARE started. It was a way to have people pull together to conduct little groups and meetings. They called some of those study groups and search for God groups. They conducted readings on real specific topics, and they made an effort to preserve it all, and that's really where the ARE had its beginning.
Greg, amazing research, I think, that you've been doing with this. And I assume the folks at ARE were pretty helpful, too, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, Sidney Kirkpatrick did a lot of this research in the people. And I know a few others, but I don't know that we're allowed to talk about them yet. And Kirkpatrick, another thing they're doing, Kirkpatrick has actually built this Auroscope that Casey actually gave a blueprint for, and he's built several of those, and several hundred ARE members have looked through this device, and it's a device where you can see people's auras. I've actually been, but I haven't used it myself. I've been right by it, but there was a line to use it, and for one reason or another, I guess talking to people and people wanting to talk, I just didn't get in the line to use the thing.
Is that story correct, where Edgar Casey, who could read auras, was getting into an elevator and didn't see auras on anybody? He backed out, and then the elevator crashed and everybody died?
I do believe that story is true, yes.
Oh, geez. I mean, I use that story at some events that I go to. It's an incredible story. I mean, my gosh.
There are so many just amazing things that Casey talked about, his predictions that did come true. It's remarkable. He did predict the stock market crashing. There's no, in the 1929 crash, he talked about it a couple years before it, and he mentioned it was going to happen in 29. 6 months before the stock market crashed, he told a New York stockbroker that it's going to go down to that. And he ended it with the words, "This warning has been given." That's what he told the stockbroker. The stockbroker, though, decided that he would use his own judgment and make even more money. And, of course, the stockbroker then went under because he didn't sell before.
and he could have. Hey, did Casey ever say when the Hall of Records would be discovered?
He did, but there's no date. He said it would be discovered when the time was right, which means when humanity can handle it. He said that there would be two men and one woman, probably, that would be the first to enter into a Hall of Records, but he did not give us a date. He did say just when the time is right. I don't know when that time is. Obviously, it hasn't been right.
Well, hopefully sooner than later, Greg.
It'd be nice in our lifetime, but then again, I'm not sure that I'm not sure humanity's ready for anything like that.
Well, maybe really not. Know. Hey, would you give us your websites, Greg?
Sure. Actually, they're on your website, but it's go to edgarcaycee.org, edgarcaycee.org, and apmagazine.info. Those are the two main ones.
Super. Greg, when we come back at the top of the hour, I want to talk about the work of Edgar Casey and the mound builders and have you tell us the significance of that and what that all means. Incredible stories of giants. And then in our last hour with Greg Little, we'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.